Are you, your friends, or family interested in having a long, healthy life and stopping progression of heart disease and avoiding a future heart attack? Well, then this is the conversation for you. We have none other than Dr. Arthur Agatston, inventor of the Agatston score 40 years ago for the CT scan of the heart, the calcification scan. And he's been serially scanning his patients for pretty much 40 years. He's still scanning some people that he first scanned over 30 years ago. And he has the advanced knowledge in this sphere to be able to read serial scans and monitor progression and also intervene and stop progression. So he pretty much doesn't get repeat heart attacks in his patients or heart attacks generally because he's an absolute expert in this field. So enjoy the conversation. We're also going to touch on supplements and nutraceuticals, and I'm going to flag CX8, a product I helped develop with Extend Life New Zealand, I've mentioned before. And there's a discount code there if you want to add this exceptional nutraceutical compilation of different compounds to your heart attack prevention program. And indeed, stopping calcification progression, because we already have some testimonials coming in now for people who have stopped their progression over the last year or 18 months since we first released this product. Now, I will say, of course, those people also were getting up to speed on low carb, healthy fats, fasting, and all the other measures. But it's really been fascinating to get that feedback from people who strongly perceived that adding in CX8 was a key part of their regimen. So anyway, no further ado, let's talk to Arthur Agatston, cardiologist extraordinaire.
Hey guys, super important podcast today. And we're returning to my friend, Dr. Arthur Agatston, who basically invented the algorithm for the coronary calcium scan, the Agatston score. And today we're going to go through the process of atherosclerosis and explain the fundamentals very clearly. Arthur's brought a bunch of slides to go through this. So after this, you will have no doubts about soft plaque, hard plaque, progression, stopping progression, and lifestyle, diet, supplements, and indeed medications. The whole gamut of preventing heart attacks today with Dr. Arthur Agatston. Great to see you, Arthur.
Ivor, as always, so great to be with you. And I always have to thank you again. You really helped get me into the craft test where we measure insulin resistance and beta cell function really early. And a lot of it was your great lecture, and we use it every day.
Excellent, Arthur. It was a revelation to me too when I first went and interviewed Dr. Kraft, and we actually ran an event in Ireland a couple of weeks ago, very successful, around 75 insulins and 1 hour insulins with the new technology, Pinprick. And I gave talks all day and I showed your talk from We Love Our Heart, which was fantastic. And we had a great day, public came in floods, and we're gonna probably repeat these events all around Ireland and even the UK. So super stuff.
Well, we got to do one in Miami with the finger stick also. We don't have the finger stick yet, but we're working on it with your friends.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, that's metabolic, I think. But here, you know what we'll do, because people don't like waiting for the hot stuff, we might go straight into you sharing your screen, your slides, and then running through the brief presentation that we chatted about earlier.
Ivor, in looking at coronary atherosclerotic progression, it's important to understand that we don't have heart attacks until there's a really large atherosclerotic burden from the beginning to the end of the vessel. This is reflected by the calcium score, and we look at all the risk factors that divided into two groups. First, primarily lifestyle risk factors, and these are what we call pre-diabetes, then pre-diabetes, and finally diabetes, and these are all associated with all of our chronic diseases. On the other side, primarily non-lifestyle risk factors or genetic factors, they all combine into determining the atherosclerotic burden, but this occurs over many, many years, which gives us a window of opportunity to follow the progression of the atherosclerosis. And we're really gonna see how that works. Let's look first at the traditional view of atherosclerotic progression, which I was taught in medical school and even during my cardiology fellowship in the 1970s. We start with a normal vessel, and then what we were taught was you began with a cholesterol plaque, and it grew gradually until it became obstructed. You started with a 20% lesion, and eventually it would get to, say, 70%, and that's where you couldn't increase blood flow significantly. So if you exercised, what I was taught was if you walked 20 blocks in New York, you'd begin to get angina. And then as you got to be a 75, 80, 85, 90% lesion, it would be 15 blocks, 10 blocks, and eventually you had the big one when the vessel totally obstructed. The only thing is we realized quickly, this was not what we see in clinical practice. People don't have gradually increasing angina or chest pain with exertion over weeks, months, or years. One day they're fine, and the next day they have a heart attack or new onset angina. So this is not the way it works. The current view of how atherosclerosis progresses really started in the later 1980s, led by Dr. Valentin Fuster, that plaques don't grow just continuously. Here again is a coronary artery with some atherosclerosis, and we're going to look at cross sections to explain this. You start with a pristine vessel, normal blood flow. But what we learned from Dr. Glatkoff in the late 1980s was that the early atherosclerosis doesn't grow into the lumen, but actually grows out, and the overall vessel gets larger, which we call remodeling. Where the flow is, it can look completely normal when there's a lot of stuff, including coronary calcification, occurring in the vessel wall. When the plaque gets to a certain size, what I call the cholesterol pimple, it pops. And when it pops, tissue factor is exposed to the bloodstream, and that causes a blood clot. Just like when we cut ourselves and the blood is exposed to the tissue around the cut and we have a clot. Now, in the coronary arteries, about 95 to 99 times out of 100, this blood clot does not occlude the entire vessel and cause a heart attack. It heals over, and heals over with scar tissue and then with calcium. It can be completely outside the lumen. It can be mildly obstructive. But even when it's 70, 80% blocked, usually it doesn't cause an event or even symptoms. Most people, when they present with chest pain, have two or three vessel disease, not just one blockage. If we open a blockage once there's scar tissue like this, it doesn't prevent a heart attack, because the heart attacks cause when you have plaque rupture and a large clot. Once you have scar tissue, it's inert. It doesn't continue to grow. Let's look at the age of these atherosclerotic plaques from birth to adult. Again, we start with just a cholesterol plaque, which you can see on a CT angiogram. These are fatty plaques, and this is what we're seeing, the cholesterol plaque. After rupture, within 6 months to 2 years, you begin to see calcification. Around the plaque, the scar tissue is getting denser. So it continues to get denser, the calcium increases, and eventually with old plaque, the scar tissue is very dense. You can't distinguish it from the rest of the vessel, and the calcium has continued to grow. If we look at the natural history of plaque progression, while the flow remains normal, the scar tissue remains in the same place, the calcium continues to grow. So the calcium is really telling us the age of the plaque. A big chunk of calcium means the plaque is old and not young. What's happening is at the beginning of the vessel, we often see larger plaques because that's where atherosclerosis begins. And as you get down, you see younger plaques that formed recently, didn't have as much time to calcify. It's really analogous to tree rings. The tree rings on the inside represent what happened hundreds of years ago. And it's the same in the vessel wall. The biggest calcifications are old plaques like the old tree rings. As you go down the vessel, you get younger plaques with less calcification. And even younger ones are these target lesions where on a CT angiogram, you can actually see the scar tissue. And of course, the youngest plaques have no calcium at all. And these are the ones that are at risk of rupturing. Let's look at some clinical examples of how this works. Here's a 67-year-old fellow who presented actually for a cardiac evaluation with these lipids, which weren't too striking. And his hemoglobin A1C was not at the level of prediabetes. Even though he was obese and had this big stomach, he was considered by the traditional Framingham risk algorithms low risk. But when he had a calcium score, it was very high. And when you looked at the calcium, it was dense, it was large. This had been there for many, many years. This was long-term risk factor exposure, which meant there was probably a genetic factor as well as his lifestyle. And in fact, he ended up having a few genetic problems, including being homozygous for 9p21 and having HDL dysfunction. Here's another patient, a 58-year-old, who, when he retired young, put on a lot of weight, developed type 2 diabetes, and when we first saw a calcium scan, he had very small young plaque. That meant relatively recent risk factor exposure, not things that were genetic, that were there from birth and when he was a teenager. This was when he gained weight and developed lipid abnormalities later in life. So this is the way we can really tell old from young plaques and gives us a whole history of coronary disease. And now we'll look at how all this happens and how atherosclerosis plaque does progress. It's something we call the feed-forward mechanism of plaque progression. And this tells us why heart attacks occur almost exclusively and not until you get a large plaque burden. We know from years of pathology studies of atherosclerosis that the process begins at the beginning of the vessel and proceeds down the vessel. You don't actually have a heart attack until you have a really lumpy, bumpy vessel with a large plaque burden. So how does this all occur? Well, if we look at a branch vessel, we actually look at in our practice every day, the carotid artery with a branch, we notice that the atherosclerotic plaque always begins where the branching takes place, where there's a division. This is well accepted. And to give you an idea of how this happens, let's look at a picture of the Colorado River. Here's water flowing along the river. When it flows on the inside around a curve, the flow is much slower than where it flows around the outside. It has to flow faster here to catch up. It's analogous to a horse race. The horse that's leading always hugs the rail because it doesn't have to go as a horse on the outside to catch up. And it's similar. The water on the outside has to go faster. It turns out where the water goes slowly, it dumps silt, and you see this big accumulation of silt on the inside, but where the water is going faster, it carves out a canyon. When you make a left turn, now the water is going more slowly on the inside. So here's the silt where it's faster on the outside. That's where you carve into the canyon. It's the same way in the coronary arteries, where the blood flow is slower, just like the water. This is where the atherosclerosis builds up, on the inside, not on the outside. Where we do intravascular transesophageal ultrasound on an aorta or postmortem aorta, in fact, it's the same way here. The atherosclerosis builds up on the inside of the vessel, not on the outside. It continues all the way down, and some of the greatest accumulation of plaque occurs early, where the aorta divides into the iliacs and then into the femorals, because you have turbulent flow and a big branching point. Here you have the same process of plaque rupture and clot. Even though you're having plaque ruptures, you don't see complete occlusion and people grabbing their legs and saying, oh my God, I got the big one, because flow is large and robust and the clot just gets washed away. So that's why in the aorta, in the iliacs, in the femorals, you don't get sudden occlusions. Let's see how this all applies to how atherosclerosis progresses and how this explains why we don't have a heart attack until there's a large plaque burden. When we're young and there's robust flow in the proximal coronary arteries, here's the aorta, here's the beginning of the left main, left anterior descending arteries, and the flow, like in the aorta and the iliacs, is very robust here, and there's a lot of branch points. This is where atherosclerosis begins and the first calcification. Now, when you have the early plaque here, it causes a lump and causes the disturbed flow to be transmitted down the vessel. Here's another branching point, another early plaque, and so here we get the disturbed flow going down the vessel. This causes you to be more atherogenic with abnormal flow, just like along the Colorado River, and you continue to develop more plaque, more disturbed flow, and this proceeds in this feed-forward mechanism down the vessel. More plaque, more disturbed flow, more atherogenesis. When the vessel becomes lumpy, bumpy, and stiffer, not only do you have the abnormal flow, but you develop an overall stiffer vessel that can't dilate. That's what we call a vulnerable vessel. As you get more and more plaque and ruptures, the clot is less likely to just get washed away. That gives you a vulnerable vessel, and the abnormal flow also makes the blood stickier. Platelets are more likely to aggregate. Once you have a vulnerable vessel and vulnerable blood, that's the next clot that can grow, become stable, and that's where you have a heart attack occurring. Even at the beginning of the vessel, if you have another plaque rupture up here and clot, this is now a stiff vessel, doesn't dilate, the flow is abnormal, so you can get a clot, a heart attack, any place along this vessel. But this explains why we need an extensive plaque burden before we have a heart attack. And in fact, in the Heinz-Nickdorf recall study in Germany, when they looked at the rate of calcium score progression, the higher the calcium score, the faster the rate of plaque progression. And that's because with a more lumpy, bumpy vessel, you got accelerated atherosclerosis and the higher chance of heart attack. So, Ivor, let's see how this actually applies to clinical practice and how we follow our patients. We're going to look at some cases of CT, but also ultrasound. I'm going to start with plaque regression, which only occurs in soft plaque. It's best illustrated with the carotid artery because it's large and we can see it with ultrasound. So normally in the carotid artery, we have the flow coming here, and this is the intima. Here's a soft plaque that's been built up. And this is a cholesterol-filled plaque that hasn't ruptured or degenerated. Below, we see where there are some plaques that have degenerated. We have scar tissue or calcium. It's dense. It actually casts a shadow on the ultrasound. It does it here and does it here. But where the plaque is soft, there is no shadow. Where it's dense, there is. So that's one of the ways in ultrasound we can tell young from old plaques. With intravascular ultrasound done in the coronary arteries, which is invasive, studies have shown with aggressive statin treatment where you have a cholesterol-filled soft plaque can regress. This is not feasible for clinical practice. With CT angiography, we can see soft plaques. It's more cumbersome than just a calcium score, but we can do it. Here's a patient with a soft plaque and with a young target plaque where it started to calcify, but the scar tissue is not that dense yet. This patient was treated aggressively with diet and medication. Here is the soft plaque. Over several years, it became calcified after rupturing, and where the target lesion was, it's now progressed with calcium and you can't see the scar tissue around it. This is one way that confirms the overall hypothesis that we start with soft plaques, they calcify, and then the calcium progresses over time. Here's a carotid ultrasound where, again, we're starting with a carotid soft plaque. And over time, with aggressive lifestyle and statins, this is a guy who's only 44 when he presented, you get gradual regression of the soft plaque to a really normal vessel. So you can regress soft plaque, but calcified plaque, discarded plaque, is inert. It does not progress or regress. Here, where we're just using coronary calcium, you see them early and you can literally count the plaques. It's very easy to follow. Here's a fellow who started at age 53 with two plaques. A lot of plaque for a 53-year-old. And as he gets older, the plaque gets a little bit denser, the two plaques, but there are no new plaques. So even though his calcium score will be increasing, there are no new plaques, and he's safe. Here again is the plaque getting bigger, but no new plaques arising. So the treatment is working. Now let's look at another patient who we're looking from right to left here and started with a calcification in a branch of his left coronary artery, and this one, no plaque. And in a couple years, now he does have plaque, new plaque occurring. The other plaque is getting a little bit denser. Once this plaque occurs, this plaque is getting larger and denser. So is the old plaque getting larger and denser. But the fact is, He did develop new plaque. That means that the treatment wasn't good enough. We need to do more aggressive therapy. Here's another patient who presented at 36 with coronary disease, a coronary calcium score, wanted to do everything just with lifestyle, but he had genetic factors. And in a few years, even in his carotid, he developed a new soft plaque. He also developed a new calcified plaque, so he absolutely needed more than lifestyle therapy. He needed something to overcome his genetic problems. He did very well with lifestyle. He certainly slowed progression, but he didn't stop it. And again, this is a soft plaque, not casting a shadow, so it's new. Here are some other cases that we followed for many years, 20 years plus, with the coronary calcium. And here with three-dimensional reconstruction, the old plaque continued to get denser, but you didn't see new plaques forming down the vessel. And that's what we've seen over years. The proximal plaque, the plaque at the beginning of the vessel, gets larger and denser, but we don't see new calcifications. And here is another patient over 20 plus years. The old calcification gets denser, but no new calcium forms down the vessel. And one further patient, a lot of old calcium, but no new calcium. So this is how we know we're treating patients well. And there is some new technology where we can think we can don't have to so just look at this calcium, but we can quantify it with new software that's coming out. So what this means is the earlier we see plaque, it will start at the beginning. The plaque will start at the beginning with large plaque, but we want to see it before it progresses down the vessel with younger plaques. The earlier we see it, the easier it is to prevent that atherosclerotic burden from growing to the point that we have actually atherosclerotic events. Ivor, we're really getting a really good handle on this, and it's very exciting.
Excellent, Arthur, and that was the perfect description with slides and clarifying everything. What I loved about that was, well, one thing is it gets rid of this, oh, but the calcium scan doesn't see the soft plaque, and that's what causes the issues. So you've beautifully described that that's not actually relevant or salient, that the calcium shows the overall burden of soft plaque that's growing in your body. So it reflects that reality. And then your ser
Ivor, they've actually done studies with CT angiograms that if you have minimal plaque burden and you see a vulnerable plaque, your prognosis is still good. That plaque may rupture, but it won't kill you. Now, if we see a big vulnerable plaque, we like to treat it and see it regress to be 100% sure. But the fact is, if you follow just with coronary calcium, if you have a zero or a very low score, you can follow the overall calcium does reflect the total plaque burden, which reflects the soft plaque and the hard plaque.
Exactly, perfect. And I know that Professor Brundage and Professor Budoff and many more I interviewed, I know you're kind of buddies with all of them, they all made that same point again and again. But somehow the industry seems to be obsessed with that soft plaque point. But anyway, we've killed that one there. So then moving on, I mean, if you think of three axes, you've got lifestyle. And diet, of course, which is hugely important, links to CRAF test, early insulin resistance, all of that stuff, and exercise. You've then got medication, which in tough cases or late cases or established atherosclerosis, where, as you say, there's a self-accelerating nature that the lumpy, bumpy, diseased vessel with a lot of calcification tends to promote the problem, even if you try and fix the original driver. So medication has its place. You expertly apply it. I think most doctors maybe less expertly apply it. But then there's the third axis for me, which more and more I'm getting interested in, beyond diet and lifestyle deficiencies. So you call out absolutely vitamin D. You call out at some point vitamin C. You called out omega-3. And then we just talked a short while ago about magnesium is huge. And interestingly, I'll show it on the screen now when I edit this. But one of the only RCTs that showed a dramatic slowing of progression from 42% per annum in the control versus 11% per annum over 2 years in the intervention. And that intervention was just magnesium oxide, you know, showing this dramatic in an RCT, not associational. So there's a huge arena for supplementation and deficiency being something that might get the effect even of medications in harder cases.
Yeah, and I agree. I'm anxious to, to see the RCT on the magnesium with calcium progression. I hadn't seen that, but we use so much calcium because with our low carb, intermittent fasting, keto diet, depending on the individual, one of the things is early on and with exercise, you lose a lot of water and electrolytes. And we find for those patients, they actually need more salt and a lot of magnesium. And if I don't keep up on magnesium, I get crampy at night. And so I'm always really careful with my magnesium supplementation. And there are so many other ways, arrhythmias and other issues positive for magnesium. And we know we're getting less of it in the soil. So that's that along the vitamin D, omega-3. Are supplements that we do use liberally. And again, the
Yeah,
risk
that's
is
it.
so small.
Yeah, oh, the risk is practically non-existent, I think, in
Yes,
many
I agree.
cases. Like vitamin D was pretty much proven 30 to 40,000 IU per day is below the threshold for long-term toxicity. And we make around 20,000 units in around a half an hour in good sun in swimming trunks, which kind of illustrates the principle. But the same for all the others too. I developed with Warren Matthews of Extend Life actually a nutraceutical product, and we kind of use what we know best. So we put in MK7, you know, K2, we put in the D3, we put in some other interesting ones like omega-7, which may be an even more effective thing than omega-3.
Yep.
And we kind of put in eight components of our best shot with the best published data into one composite product called CX8. And interestingly, I have many, many emails over the years, Arthur, from people, I mean, I don't know, 30, 40 just from my network, who have stopped progression and even got excited because they apparently got regression. But I think you'd agree, it's probably a pseudo regression. The calcium mainly has stopped progressing, which is bizarre in normal medicine, but that's as good as regressing.
Yes.
So I've although, yeah, all those people. And interestingly, one of your patients, and at least two more now, using CX8 over the last year and a half, have also showed stop progression. But it's hard to deconfound that with the fact that they've obviously been doing the other good stuff too. But still, like, very tantalizing.
Just a quick interlude here to remind you guys that CX8 is available now for the past 18 months, and there's a discount code IVERCX8 which gets you 15% off the first order should you wish to avail of this offer and add CX8 to your heart disease prevention program. We spend quite a lot of time picking eight different components to get into this nutraceutical of the highest quality suppliers across the world, and you may want to look into it for yourself. But don't forget, you got to do the low carb, healthy fats, fasting, some exercise, and all the other important stuff that myself and Arthur discussed. But you can also add this for the deficiencies and the further challenges that people may have if they've already developed heart disease and they have, as Arthur describes, bumpy arteries, then the process will tend to be self-driving, and that's where you gotta throw everything at the problem. So, links down below, and now we'll get back to Arthur.
And all that is, of course, very low risk. And the one thing, you know, with both the omega-3 and vitamin D is to measure blood levels, which we do routinely. And particularly because you don't know how much omega-3 you're getting in your diet. And often if you're getting a lot of omega-6, you're blocking the incorporation of omega-3. And so there have been some very poorly done studies where they just give a dose of omega-3. And I think, you know, with vitamin D also, if you can measure levels of what you're actually absorbing, that can be variable. And we found that very helpful.
Yeah, and you know, that just brings to mind that measurement, as we say in engineering, if you don't measure it, it don't get fixed. But one of the big problems in complex problem solving is using the kind of wrong measurement. And a couple of examples spring to mind. For magnesium, yeah, there are certain tests that are accurate, but because the body controls the magnesium in the blood so well, if you use a generic test, even if you're very deficient and you're beginning to pull magnesium out of your bones, your blood level will still look kind of okay. Yes. So it's very misleading. And the other one is red blood cell omega-3 content, or the omega index. Yes. There's proper measurements for omega-3, but then there's generic ones that won't show up a problem, even when you got a major problem.
Yes, agreed. And it's when you measure that it does correlate with progression. And I agree, people sometimes ask about their magnesium levels in the blood. And that's, the traditional test you can't use at all.
Yeah,
same with sodium for that matter.
Yeah, and a lot of them, they're so tightly regulated at blood level that you need to look deeper to tissue sometimes, or like the cell membrane, like you need to go a little deeper. So we won't exhaustively go through them here, but people need to really kind of look up each one and understand it. And the stopping of progression, I'm delighted the last few years, and I didn't realize, of course, because we only hooked up maybe 2 or 3 years ago, that you've been watching progression and seeing the stopping of progression for like decades. But I thought it was a completely new thing. But it is heartening to see scores of people writing to me, and they send their scans. Now, privacy, etc., I don't want to get involved in people's actual medical, but they send it, what can I do? And they send me their scans excitedly, and to see someone with a score of like 280, and then 18 months later, they get a same, say, 64 slice machine, so it'll be roughly, you know, dependable to compare, and they come in with a 250 or a 220, or maybe it's a 290. I mean, that, as per Heinz Nixdorf, they said calcification based on starting number and age is inexorable. It will continue to progress along a mathematical function which we can define. So the medical orthodoxy in Heinz Nixdorf said, correctly at the time, it's inevitable and inexorable. And yet here we are all over the world, people intervening and stopping their own progression. I mean, obviously with your expert intervention with people, that's been happening, but people can even manage it themselves. Isn't that astonishing?
Well, yes, and one thing where I have to criticize my own score, which was developed along with Warren Janowitz, is we look, when you see the people early, we always look side by side, because the beam hits the calcium, no matter what you use to score it, a little bit differently. So from 1 year to the next, certain number of scores will go down. But that's technical. Again, I don't think the healed plaque regresses, but the lack of progression means you're regressing the soft plaques. And you know, some of our cases, one of the very first when we did the first scans, it was June of 1988 with Warren Janowitz, with David King of the Imatron Corporation, we grabbed a bunch of physicians, threw them on the table. One of them happened to be the chief of medicine at that time, had a very high score in his 40s, I guess, 1988. He just had his 80th birthday. He has a very high score from the old plaque progressing, but aggressive treatment and lifestyle and exercise You know, people say when the high score, oh my God, is this a death sentence? No, you know, here's a guy and many others we followed for all these years. So you can slow and or stop. We see many people where they've been on statins, on lifestyle, where they've clearly slowed progression, but we see some young lesions, they haven't stopped it. So that's where we fine tune, because our goal is to stop it completely.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is the goal, particularly for you from a professional viewpoint. Of course, you will take no risk. You will leave no stone unturned with any patient. But also for the person themselves, I used to always say, you know, this is the most important project of your life. If you discover you have a super high score or a high score, you've got a problem. That's true. But if you intervene and make it your business to leave no stone unturned and cover lifestyle, diet and supplementation deficiency and medications if necessary, that's the key. And then you can validate over a couple of years, not necessarily that the score goes backwards, that can be within the mechanistic noise, but that it slows down or is way below the progression that would normally occur and below 15%.
Yeah, 10 to 20% per year. And over the long term, we absolutely see flattening of the calcium score. And also, if you have a population, you can show it. It's just in individuals, it's important besides the score to look year by year. Like, and I showed you, when you get the patients young enough, showed you one in his 50s who stopped progression, has stopped progression over 6, 7, 8 years without with lifestyle alone. And I showed you one young guy, clear more of a genetic component, where he definitely slowed with lifestyle, but didn't stop it. So there was some progression. So that's why we added medication. And I can't emphasize enough, the earlier you find out, first of all, we see people with high cholesterol scores who have high cholesterol numbers, who have scores of zero, popularized by my colleague and friend, Khurram Nasser, the power of zero. If you have a zero score, we see people in their 70s, 80s with cholesterols over 300 and squeaky clean vessels. And we think we know why, and we stop their statins. And so there are a lot of people who are on statins who don't need them. There are some who do, if there's an important genetic component. And again, once you have a really high score, the risk to benefit ratio becomes in favor of medication as well as lifestyle.
Yeah, true. And in fact, there was a number needed to treat a study on statins, and it showed that with a zero score, there was an indiscernible benefit from statins, a large associational study. And as the score went up and the risk went up and the real disease was present, then you began to see a reasonable number needed to treat number, which just illustrates your point. It was a lovely study. But Khurram Nasser's study a few years ago was absolutely beautiful. Coronary calcium score, it works for high cholesterol too, I think he called it. And it just showed from the the MESA data, the excellent database of many kinds of different populations and ethnic origins. And it showed that the people or the group of a 190 or above LDL alone, the magic 190, which is autostatin nowadays, that group had a similar calcification distribution as a group as the people who were down average of 135. And it showed like that, you know, the high cholesterol, it's all really other factors that cause you to have the problem, not so much the cholesterol at all.
Both the total cholesterol and total LDL cholesterol are very poor predictors of future heart attack and stroke. And in fact, it was Dr. Castelli showed in the original Framingham study that the average cholesterol in patients in Framingham who progressed to heart attacks and those who didn't was in that year, it was like 220 in both. It wasn't really different. And The small particles are the more atherogenic. Those are the ones that come from lifestyle, from the fatty liver that turns into small LDL and small HDL. And that can be genetic also. which is why we do advanced blood testing. But it is primarily lifestyle. And if you look in people actually treated with statins and outcomes, treating those with predominantly large LDL doesn't change anything. If people with small LDLs, and these were people in the FOREST trial, these large old statin trials where they weren't treated with lifestyle, and it was a small LDL that predicted the poor outcome, and they actually did better with statins. But that's in the small LDL, that's where the lifestyle becomes really the primary primary issue.
Yeah, and of course it is huge. And we know there's an epidemic of CRAFT test failures. I think America has around 11% type 2 diabetics theoretically, but even from the NIH or the government survey a few years ago, I point out to people, they have 64% of over 45s are either type 2 diabetic or pre-diabetic. And we know the pre-diabetic is type 2 diabetic. So that's 64% of over 45s on the record using glucose measurements alone. But then, of course, there's the pre-diabetics who'd fail a CRAFT test. So maybe 3/4 of adult Americans, I can never believe when I'm saying this, what I'm saying, but it's true. 3/4 of adult Americans over 45 years old share the pathology that's the primary problem to drive heart disease and indeed Alzheimer's and many of the solid tumor cancers are highly insulin dependent.
Yes.
And here we are, and yet no one talks about it. It's just astonishing.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. And the lifestyle, and the thing is, the way I like to describe it, if you look at some hunter-gatherers, society sub-Saharan like the Maasai, they have the same genes we do. They have the 1921s and the others, but they don't get coronary disease because they will pass CRAFT tests. In our practice, we always grab, I have a few, the exception that proves the rule. We do have some people in their 60s and 70s, even 80s with a normal CRAFT test, but they're really rare. The great majority of people don't pass the CRAFT test. So that's where they mix with these genetic factors that wouldn't be so important if they didn't have the soil, if they didn't have the pre-diabetes. And that's why it's important to do the CRAFT test early on. And that's a little tough to do in practices. And so we're hoping with finger stick and getting the word out there, more people will get an early CRAFT test and an early calcium score. With that, we can totally stop the progression of heart disease and I think a lot of other chronic disease.
Yeah, here's to that, and absolutely. And you know, we had at my Irish event, we had Dr. Donal Collins, who's been doing for a year and a half now all these finger pricks. He's honed it. He's kind of dropping to 1 hour insulins and correlating with 2 hour to not even have to do 2 hour, but to broadly get the answer at 1 hour. And we also had Eric there who was a medical doctor actually, but now he's the CEO of Metabolic. And we just had a great day doing these post-glucose insulins, fasting insulins, and the energy and the data that just flows out for the people. And then of course we were able to explain to them how it works. This is the future, I think, Arthur, to democratize this and just get it out there.
I agree 100%. And you know, when I first started writing some books for the general population at that point, you know, if you had an academic background, you weren't supposed to do it. But you know, not that many people read the journals and not that many doctors know about CRAFT or use coronary calcium the way they should. And so what you're doing, Ivor, thank God for the good social media, not that there's not a lot of bad material out there, but this has really helped in democratizing the data and getting it out to the general population. And if they ask their doctor to get a calcium score or a CRAFT test, that's what we have to do to start saving lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much, Arthur, and everything you've been able to show me as well, and all of this data that you've been gathering for decades that unfortunately not enough people are seeing. But I know we both have to run on now. It's a beautiful sunny day here in Ireland. I got to go and collect the kids from fishing trips, so I better go down there and get them. But just for people out there to remember that key point that Arthur you just said, a high score is not a death sentence. It can be if you choose to ignore it, but we know now all the axes. You've got the lifestyle and diet, which is crucial. You've got medication if needed, and that's a personal decision with your doctor. And then you've got the supplementation, nutraceuticals, and deficiencies that you really need to target as well, especially if you've got a high score. To that end, I'll add details of CX8, which is the only nutraceutical I was actually involved in developing. And I think we put in the very best that non-pharmaceutical has to offer. So for people, if they wish, they can check that out further. But thanks so much, Arthur, and we'll be back again in a while, and we'll be revisiting this and other topics.
Thank you so much, Ivor. Really enjoy it.
Hope you enjoyed that great conversation with one of the best in the world in cardiology. And as mentioned, you can use the code IVORCX8 for a 15% discount off your first order of Extend Life's CX8 nutraceutical compilation product, which I helped develop with Warren, my buddy in Extend Life. And you may wish to add it to your heart disease and calcification progression stopping program. But again, completely up to you. Just delighted to be able to put the offer out there. And as always, I mentioned this does give me a little something to help keep my train on the tr to help keep my train on the track and keep my program of heart disease prevention and research getting out there to the world and continue that work. So really appreciate that. But links are down below for those who are interested, and direct links also to the product itself with the embedded discount code. So thank you.